there, and we pray for you. If you have your Bibles, I hope you'll go back to Philippians chapter 1 with me. Again, Philippians chapter 1. I'm not going to be using the screen today. You won't see an outline or poems or sayings up there. I don't think it needs anything like that. But again, just something else we need to be thankful for. If you put together and you've been to the two services that I spoke on Thanksgiving so far, the one service was last Sunday morning, and I spoke being thankful for the biggest thing that God has done for us and given us, and that is His Son to die on the cross, and praise the Lord for our salvation. Again, everything else just kind of pines in respect to that, does it not, in comparison to that? Again, when you have your salvation, you have everything. Again, when you come to the end of life and you, again, don't seem to have anything, if you have Jesus, you still have everything. Then I spoke on Psalm 131, kind of a different message in the evening, but I hope a good one, is sometimes thanking God for the hard things in our lives. And again, if you go to Psalm 131, it talks about being like a child that's been weaned. And again, the idea there is that when it's time to be weaned, no child likes that time that they're going through. There's a lot of crying, a lot of screaming almost, and things like that. But then once they're weaned, again, I guess the lesson that I taught was that we learn to live with things that we thought we couldn't live without. Does that make sense? We learn to live with things we don't think we could live without. And again, God brings different chapters into our lives. Maybe relationships, jobs, possessions, properties, that somehow God takes them from us, or they go from us. And we thought we could never make it without something like that. And yet God enables us through His grace to be stronger people, as He sometimes has to take things away from us. And some of you here are living testimonies to people that have lost something in your lives, but then you thought you could never make it through it. But then God has given the grace and you're stronger for it. And so thankful, again, for God sometimes taking things away and you don't understand why they're taken away. Until longer down the road, you understand that God has a plan. Today, again, it was supposed to be Tuesday night. One, I want to basically talk about things to be thankful for. And you're looking at the group here, minus a few people, a number of people that are on away. But being thankful for church members, people you go to church with. Sometimes we don't maybe, and I don't know if I've ever heard a sermon specifically on being thankful for people that you go to church with. I don't know. Sometimes I think that when people think of church members, you know, they think of problems. But you know what? That's not what it's all about. If you read there in Philippians chapter 1, verse 3, the verse that John started with, it says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. Who are we talking about? We are talking about the church at Philippi. The people that He started a church there. And again, if you remember Acts chapter 16, there are some events in Acts chapter 16 that are hard to forget once you've studied them, are they not? Again, they cast a spirit, a demon out of a girl that was disrupting Paul's ministry. And when the owners of this slave girl saw that their means of riches were gone, they grabbed Paul and Silas and took them to the magistrates in the middle of the town square, and they stripped their clothes off of them and beat them with rods, the Bible says. And I would think that's going to hurt, okay? I mean, that's got to be hurting. And then they were thrown into jail, into the dungeon of the jail, and yet at midnight when they should have been complaining, we know that they were singing and praying, were they not? And because of their glorifying God in a terrible moment, a man and his family get saved. As an earthquake comes, the jailer is going to kill himself, but Paul tells him not to hurt himself. And sure enough, he comes in with that great question in Acts 16:30. What is it? What must I do to be saved? And the great answer comes back, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. And from there, the man is saved. His whole house is saved. A church that had a beginning there in Philippi, I believe, gets stronger. And Paul, now when he's writing back to the Philippians from a jail, is saying, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. Again, as I look at this verse and as it's put together going down to verse 6, can I just say that, you know what? Church members aren't perfect. If you look there in verse 1, you have bishops and deacons. Can I tell you something about bishops and deacons? Bishop's another name for a pastor. You know what? We're not perfect. Deacons aren't perfect. Trustees aren't perfect. Sunday school teachers aren't perfect. There's no members of this church that are perfect. And sometimes what can happen is when we go to a church with imperfect people and we ourselves are imperfect, sometimes what we want to do is dwell on the imperfections. And you know, when I come to a verse like this, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. I see that Paul looks at church members a little bit differently. He looks at them as maybe being imperfect and maybe we don't all do things right and what we should do. But as he thinks about these people, he thanks God for every one of them and the good things that they bring along. Again, as I stop here, and again, pretty much the sermon is stopping and thinking about church members and what they've done. But here's the great thing about it when it comes to church members, it comes to me, and it comes to you. Notice in verse 6, I love this verse, being confident of this very thing, that he that hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Does everybody understand what that means? None of us are perfect. We're still a work in progress. And I am confident, as Paul is, that as Jesus Christ does His work in me, there will be, and I don't know if I should use the word a time, but there will be a time when we will be perfected. And it will be because of the grace and work of Jesus Christ in our lives. It's not that we're doing it. And so again, when you look at someone else and say, oh, that person, well, they've got this problem, or they've got this little foible about them, or they've got this little idiosyncrasy, it's okay. Because Jesus Christ is doing the work. I don't know if I can get the illustration exactly right, you know, because I read it years ago. And it could have been 30 years ago I read the illustration. And I believe that Billy Graham and his wife were driving to go somewhere, and they came upon a road construction somewhere. And basically, as they were in the construction, they got stopped a number of times. The road was rough. It really was delaying their journey, and it was taking a lot. But finally, they got to the end of the construction, and there was a sign at the end of it said, construction ended. Thanks for your patience. And Ruth Graham looked at her husband and said, I think that would make a good saying to put on my gravestone. Construction ended. Thanks for being patient. You know, and that's really what it is with all of our lives, is it not? The road's a little bumpy. There's times we get stopped. We don't do everything perfect, you know, and we're under construction. I do believe it was Bill Gothard, and I went to a number of his seminars, and he used to give out a little pin that had a bunch of letters on it. Does anybody remember that? And I don't know what the letters were. I could figure it out if I needed to. But basically what it was is people were to look at the button. They didn't know what the button meant, and they were to say, well, what's that button mean with those letters on it? And the letters were the first letters of the words, I believe, please be patient, God is not finished with me yet. Please be patient, God is not finished with me yet. So you can figure out the letters that go on there. And that wearing that button would be a good opportunity then for somebody to go into the gospel. And so again, I don't know what gospel, how you launch into the gospel with people. But again, it's just different things that you can do. Got a story for you of how you launch into the gospel. About a year ago at this time, just a couple days from a year being a year ago, my dad and I were walking around the mountains, and we were up in the mountains or whatever, and I was ahead of him, okay, and I think, I don't know what was going on, but I was a little bit ahead of him, and I ran into two men up there. And as I ran into two men, one was kind of old and was not getting around real well, and so I stopped and asked them if they were okay, and, you know, they said they were okay, and I said, well, that's good. I mean, here you are in the middle of nowhere, okay, and you run into two guys. And so I said, oh, are you guys from around here? Where are you from? And they go, we're not from around here at all. Oh, okay, that's good. That's no problem. Well, where are you from? And they said, well, we're from Chester County. Well, folks, that's where I grew up, was in Chester County. So knowing that they were from Chester County, I just kind of launched into this one and say, okay, well, where's you live in Chester County? You know, well, we live in a little town. You know, it's out there. It's near Wagon Town. It's weird, Wagon Town. Oh. And so I just said, where do you go to church? Folks, that was my way of getting Jesus into the question. You know, where do you go to church? And they just kind of looked at me like, where do you go to church? You know, I don't know. These guys are like up in the middle of a mountain enjoying wilderness. And they're thinking some guy wants to know where we go to church. And the guy said, well, we go to Wagontown Chapel. All I knew to say is Brother Bunding still the pastor there? But I didn't think he was, because I think I'd heard he died. But I just said, is Brother Bunding still there? Oh, no, he died a few years ago. Oh, I said, well, who's the pastor there? And they said, Tim Kranz is there now. And I said, well, is that Jack's boy? Yeah, that's Jack's boy. And they're like, who are you? And I just said, well, I was raised in Chester County. I knew Pastor Bunning. I know Wagontown Chapel. I knew some people that went to Wagontown Chapel. And I know Jack Kranz and his prison ministry. I know who he is. And I know when you said Tim Kranz, I figured it had to be his boy. And I said, but I pastor on a mountain real over here. And I said, you know, I was kind of there. I just pointed this way. And I said, well, I pastor on a mountain over there. And I said, I just was interested where you went to church, because if you went to church nowhere, we were going to talk about salvation. And I know if you go to Wagontown Chapel, they preach the gospel. Oh, absolutely. We preach the gospel there. And so they kind of left or whatever. The funny thing was, not that long ago, I was at my brother's wedding. And I was at my brother's wedding, and I made it a point that everybody at the wedding, I was going to get to know who they were, ask their name, who they were, what they were from. And I just said, everybody here, I'm going to meet absolutely everybody and talk to everybody. And if I need to give the gospel, do something I can. So I went up to a man, and I said, who are you? And he gave his name, and I said, well, how do you know my brother, his wife, how do you know them? Okay. And I said, oh, where do you go to church? And the guy said, Wagontown Chapel. And I said, and I just said this to him, I said, I met two men that go to your church about a year ago. And they said that Brother Tim Kranz is the pastor there, and they let me know. And the guy looks at me and goes, you're the preacher on the mountain, aren't you? And I go, yes, sir, I am. And he said, yeah, they went back and said the strangest thing happened. We were up on this mountain in the middle of nowhere, and some guy comes up there and wants to tell us about Jesus and found out we were saved, and then we just praised the Lord together. I say that to whole say this. Folks, when you meet people, what do you use to tell them about Jesus? Bill Gothard used a little pin, be patient with me, God's not finished with me yet. Come up with some way that when people come, you have a way of getting the gospel to them. Sometimes I feel just asking where they go to church is a pretty good way to start introducing the gospel. It's kind of non-offensive, is it not? And so again, God's not finished with me yet. He that's begun a good work in me will perform it the day of Jesus Christ. I know where I am in the sermon, folks. We're not perfect church members. But here's the thing that I say when you start thinking of church members and people you go to church with. Maybe I use the word here, give people some slack. The same slack you want. We're not perfect. So when somebody says, hey, do you know so-and-so? Give them some slack. Say the good things about them. Say the great things that they've done. Don't go after the little secrets and things like that. I remember not too long ago when I was at college. Again, just like it was yesterday, and I still think of Tony Greer this way, a good friend of mine. We played basketball together. And we had a lot in common. We did a lot of things together. And one day I snuck up behind him as a bunch of guys were standing in a circle there. And I snuck up behind him. And as I got up there, the guy on the other side said, hey, that Rick Gilball, what do you think about him? And I was like, whoa, I'm paying attention to this. And Tony's like, you know, I was out of college for a while, and I spent a year or two trying to get enough money to come back. And he said, one of the greatest things about coming back was if I would have stayed in college, I would have missed getting to know Rick Gilball. And he's become one of my best friends. I'm so glad that I was able to come back and meet him and didn't graduate when I should have, or I would have missed him. I was like, whoa, you know. You know, what if he would have said, he's a scoundrel. He'd have been right. But you know what? He didn't concentrate on the bad things about me. You know? He said the good things about me. And so again, when it comes here, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. We need church people. Thinking of the card that Gail wrote. Okay, when tough times come, we need church people. It's hard to go it alone, folks. It's hard. You know, this is how I categorize people. And again, I don't know. I've got some things up here. But, you know, I categorize church members that I've been members with. I've had the opportunity, if I could put it this way, to be basically involved in the ministry of six churches in my life. Okay? Six churches in my life. Some of them a lot, some of them not much. The first church I had an opportunity to be a member of was Coatesville Presbyterian Church. That's the church that was responsible for me getting saved, because they're the ones that paid the money so I could go to camp. And I got saved in 1966 at Word Life. That's the church basically that was responsible for my whole family then becoming saved and, again, going to church. And so that's the first church I was involved with. There were two churches then during my college that I was involved in. My wife and I were involved with Landmark Baptist Church in Easley, South Carolina. And, again, I was a school teacher there. My wife was a school teacher there. And I did a lot with the youth group when I was there, what I could. I was in seminary, so it was kind of hard to do a whole lot, but we did a lot. But then, while I was there, there was a little church over in Pickens that was really struggling. And the preacher over there, I use the word, he was just wore out. And he was older, and he was having trouble. And basically, I was invited over there to Pickens Bible Church, I think it was. Maybe it was Pickens Baptist, I'm not sure. But I was invited over there to help this man who was just kind of wore out. They needed some freshness into the services. They just needed things. And so I ministered again, leaving Landmark, but not badly, just leaving it because a new ministry opened up. And again, this pastor needed somebody to do some preaching and some other things. And I was a member there. Again, the other church that I'm involved in is when we left Pickens Church, we came here, Calvary Bible Church. That was in 1982. And again, being there. And then from there, God took me from here after 8 years of being here. And I tell people I did a lot with the youth then. We had a youth director when I came, and 2 weeks later we didn't. And Pastor Hertzler said, can you work with the youth group? And I go, yeah, until we get a youth pastor. Then we got a youth pastor, and the youth pastor said, hey, can you keep working with the youth group? Okay. And so we did. But for 8 years, then God opened up an opportunity to go to Romola Bible Church. I do remember the first time we went there. They didn't know if they were going to have the doors open, but late on Saturday night, Pastor Hertzler called me and said, you're going out and preaching at Romola in the morning. And I go, who's going to teach the Sunday school class? I got your Sunday school class. So I went out to Romola. They weren't sure if church was going to be open, so only 9 people showed up. You know, 9 people showed up. I tell people, what an interesting thing. Because when I preached out there, and then in the evening or whatever, and the men said to me, we'd like you to be our pastor. Pastor Hertzler said, you're a good man. So if you want to be the pastor, you're the pastor. And I tell people, that was the easiest candidating I ever did. You know, Pastor Hertzler said, you're a good man. You want to be the pastor. You can be the pastor. So pastored out there for about 8 years. Okay. And saw a lot more than 9 people come to church then. But again, God's doing. And then from there, I went to Calvary Bible Church in Westport, a church that was struggling and had gone through a bunch of church splits and really had lost the focus of the gospel ministry. I do tell people the first Sunday that I gave an invitation, half the church was like, what did you just do? What did you just talk about when you're talking about being born again? What was all that about? Half the congregation didn't even know what I was talking about. And God enabled us for 9 years. And then coming back here, and I've got to know, again, a lot of church members, a lot of people that I just enjoy. Now, here's the best part, and here's the first group of people I'll give you. You think about it. I'll just kind of whet your appetites, but you think about it. The first group of church members that I'd like to mention is those who are no longer alive. They're gone. Okay? They're gone. Again, in my first church, at Coatesville Presbyterian Church, a number of people who have gone impressed me. Okay, I like John Harley. He was my 5th grade Sunday school teacher. And he's a man that had this big chart on dispensations, and he rolled it out for the 5th graders, okay? And taught us dispensationalism. And what a good man he was. And first man I remember that really got me involved in missions. And we had missionary offerings in our 5th grade class or whatever. I remember other Sunday school teachers, Leroy Cruikshank. I remember Leroy because I think he was like my 6th or 7th grade teacher, but this is a man, it was a diesel mechanic, a good diesel mechanic. So when he came to church, as he would plop down on the desk and open his Bible up, his hands were always dirty. It was just permanent that they weren't going to come clean from the diesel. But I think it was said about Leroy Cruikshank, he could listen to an 18-wheeler go by the church and he could tell you what was wrong with it. Okay? Just an ordinary man. I don't think he had much education. I just don't think he did. Okay, I mean, he never talked about much about education. Just a godly man that would open up a Bible and tell some boys about Jesus Christ. What a good man he was. I think of my pastor, Dr. Evans, and got to see a picture of him the other day at my parents' 60th wedding anniversary. He was my pastor that I got saved under. He pastored until I was in college or whatever. Again, just a man who loved people, and that's what I'd say. And this is what I tell people about Dr. Evans. My dad will probably shake his head. He really wasn't a good preacher. He really wasn't a good preacher. He was really smart, though. Really smart. In fact, when he found out that my brother and I were taking Greek, he'd come to church and speak to us in Greek. And we'd say, we're not learning how to speak Greek. We're just learning how to read it, to read our Bibles. We don't speak it. And he would speak Greek, and he was very educated. Not the best preacher in the world, but he loved people. And you know, sometimes if you're not a good preacher, if you love people, they'll forgive you. Did you know that? And again, but a man who preached the gospel, and I tell people, you know, he took a church and went through things. And after a while, you know, we started as a Presbyterian church. We were the only church in town knocking on doors, trying to get people saved. We'd go out on the streets and give out tracts and invite people to church. And how many buses lined up in front of our church? You know, a bunch of buses lined up, and we were very evangelistic. And I remember going to Bob Jones and telling people I went to Coastville Presbyterian Church, and people go, "Presbyterian, why aren't you a Baptist?" And I'd say, "Well, there's a Baptist church down the street. They don't do anything. They don't preach the gospel. They don't give out tracts. They don't have any buses. Nobody's getting saved down there. Why would I want to be a Baptist?" And they look at me like I was crazy. Okay? "Why would I want to be a Baptist? They don't do anything. The Presbyterians where I live are the ones that are on fire for God." And the church no longer is called Presbyterian. Is it what? Coatesville Bible Fellowship now or whatever? But they're no longer a Presbyterian. But I remember men that, again, that were in our church that had a direct impact on my life, but they're not here now. You know, they're not here. They're gone. The next place, that I just stay with is, you know, from here, I go to this church because I was here, but now I'm back. You know, I think about people that were here that impacted my life. They're not here anymore. I don't know. One of the things I miss is Carl Hartley. Carl would come in early. I don't know if you knew this. He'd come in early, and I was sometimes on the computer back there. And Carl would come back there, and he'd just put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, "Well, I think you're a keeper." And I like, "Well, okay, don't throw me back in, okay?" But and you know what? That was his way. And you knew what he meant. You know what? You're a keeper. He's the one who does remember. And he said, "You know what?" And I think this, he goes, "I remember when you were a teenager and you hunted at a little stony camp. And I remember you and your dad and your brothers and Bob Hostetler. You came down to Black Bear Camp. Is that what it was? And you guys were having a big smorgasbord or something down there. And we walked through there or whatever." And he goes, "You know what? The funny thing is, I remember you. When you came in this church, I said, you know, that's that little kid that was hunting down at Black Bear out at a little stony." And he said, "I remember you. The only one I remembered, though, was Walt Bear. I remembered you, Walt. You were out there, were you not? I remembered you, but you probably don't remember me. But I just remember Bob Hostler two camps away." But Carl would just put his hand on my shoulder and say, "You know, you're a keeper." And, it means a lot, you know, have something like that. Again, Grandma. You know, we've lost Grandma now. But, I tell people, one of the things that just amazes me, you know, is she started going to this church when she was a teenager or something. I just stayed with it. Just stayed with it. Worked at it. Prayed for people. Loved people. What a testimony. And this is what I've told my children when they were younger, but as we've gotten older. And I tell people, one of the reasons why you don't need to be afraid to die is because when you get to heaven, God already has some special people up there that we already know. It's not like I'm walking into a strange room, you know? I won't be walking into a strange room like, "Who's up here? What's going on?" I think we're going to walk in and see people that basically we're going to be waiting for us. I don't know how it's going to work when we're in heaven, you know? But I don't know. I'm figuring Carl's going to look at Jesus and say, "Hey, he's a keeper." Okay, I don't know. Maybe he'll do that, you know? And I'd always tell him, "Well, I'm still practicing. I don't get it right all the time. I'm still practicing." And he'd say, "It's all right," or whatever. But again, just being with Grandma and her faithfulness and having her here. And by the way, I called her Grandma because I taught her grandkids, and their grandkids called her Grandma, so I just called her Grandma. And she never told me not to do that. So again, just people. I think of Ethel. You just can't think of this church without thinking of Ethel. And again, just her faithfulness. And the people that she told about the Lord and the teaching that she was and passed it on to her children to be teachers. You know, these are people I think about, wow, what good people God has allowed me to be around. And again, I'm not here to miss anybody and say, okay, you didn't mention so-and-so. Again, time doesn't allow, does it? Okay, to do that. But again, just people that I got to be around, got to be special. I think of Mrs. Hertzler. I just think of Mrs. Hertzler and the specialness that she had. I got to know her a little bit, I think more through my wife and all, but just the quiet lady she was, the solid testimony she had. And again, then also hearing Pastor Hertzler say, you know, the ministry that I have, it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't have been able to continue. She was my rock. You know, I think about Mrs. Hertzler and just people that God has let me know. I think out at Romola. Again, what specialness. Here I was, and I tell people it's hard for you to imagine, but when I went to Romola, I was just a young preacher. Okay, didn't know everything, didn't know how to do everything right, got in trouble from time to time, You know, I tell people, you know, the first Easter out there, I got in a little bit of trouble, but I thought it'd be a good idea to have an Easter egg hunt. So I went out into the graveyard. You know, people had put all these beautiful flowers in the graveyard, and they were great places to hide eggs. So I went and had a, you know, hid all these eggs in the graveyard all over the place. The kids went out and found that, and people told me that was not the right thing to do. You should not have an Easter egg hunt in a graveyard, you know. And they were telling me, you know, that we got to keep the solemnity, you know, it's a serious place, and your kids are running around, jumping around, getting all that. And then I finally came up with the answer, but a little bit late. You know what, first, on the first Easter day, didn't all the fun start in a graveyard? It all started in a graveyard. Why can't we go back and have a little bit more fun in a graveyard? So from there, I learned to hide my Easter egg somewhere else. Okay? But again, I think of my good friend Chet when I think of Romola. I think of my good friend Chet. Wow, Chet Foreman. Just a great man. Again, a quiet man. A man that was just so encouraging that he and I would go out and do things, whether we drive in one of his antique cars around, or if I had a problem with my car, he'd let me use all his tools in his garage, and we'd work together. He took my kids and, just loved them to death. In fact, when my children got loose teeth, they'd say, "We have to go see Chet. He's going to pull them out." And so people are like, "Well, did you ever pull your children's teeth out?" Not really. Chet pulled them all out. Okay? You know, I'd say, "Oh, come on, I can do this." "No, Chet. Come on, I can do this." "No, Chet's going to do it." And sure enough, they'd go down to Chet, and he'd pull their teeth out. Okay? They trusted him more than me. And so I think maybe for Christy I got one out. I'm not sure. But they like going down to Chet and pulling the teeth out. Again, what a rock he was. And he was one of the people I appreciate because he worked at a funeral home. And from time to time, you know, there would be different men that would come along and want to go out to breakfast with me, or pastors that would want to go out to breakfast, and or maybe somebody would say, "I'd have to do a funeral and I'm going to do it with another pastor." And I'd always go to Chet and I'd say, "Hey, Chet, you work at the funeral home. Has this pastor ever come into the funeral home?" "Yes." "Well, what do they preach?" You know, and Chet would be like, "They don't preach the gospel. They don't preach the gospel." And I go, "Okay." Then I'd know if I had to do a funeral together with them, or if they were wanting me to join their ministerial group. I knew who I was dealing with, you know. Or I'd ask them about another man. "Well, have you ever heard this pastor?" And he goes, "And let me tell you, he preaches the gospel. He preaches the gospel. He wants people to get saved, and he preaches the gospel." The funny story, my wife, I think she just told this the other day. There was a pastor in the area. And I asked about this pastor. And he goes, "He doesn't know the gospel. He preaches a false gospel. It's not even close to being right." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then this pastor went on a missions trip to Russia. And he came back. And he did a funeral. And Chet came to me and said, "We got to change something here. Hey, you know the man?" "Yeah, I know him." He said, "He got saved while in Russia on a missions trip. He's preaching the gospel like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's a complete change. And he's telling people about the death, burial, and resurrection and believe in Jesus. And that's how you go to heaven. And he's done with that old nonsense." I'm like, "Amen." 2 weeks later, he got voted out of his church. That's the truth, folks. Because he started preaching the gospel. And so Chet was my rock, letting me know where people stood and who preached the gospel. And I always said to Chet, "Do I preach the gospel?" He says, "You got it right. And anytime you stop, I'll be all over you." You know? And so Chet and Faye, and it was hard to watch Chet die. He kind of died a long death. It wasn't as pleasant to be. But again, a man that just kept telling people about Jesus all the time. I know the Narrowhoods would know him. Art Gray was another one. What a character. What a character, Art Gray. I tell you, he's in glory. He was a brick mason all his life, laying bricks. And the guy had a sense of humor, though you had to pick it up. Because if you didn't, you'd think he was mad at you. Okay? It was a sense of humor that was a little different. And you didn't know if you were in trouble or if he was kidding. Okay? Here's the kind of guy he was. One time he was laid off from brick mason, and he was driving a bus on a route in New York City. That's where he did all his brick work, 100 stories up. But so he was driving a bus just to make up the time until he was called back to work. And he got down to the end of this park or whatever, and a man was laying some bricks around a sign. And he was watching the man lay it, and he thought, "Well, that guy really doesn't know what he's doing." But then it was time to drive, so he drove his route, and he came back, and he had to sit at the park for a few minutes. And so he got out, and he said to the guy, "I see you're laying this sign up. That looks pretty neat what you're doing. Is it hard to do?" And the guy said, "Well, it's a little tricky, but you got to know what you're doing or you'll just mess the whole thing up." And the guy said, "Really? Come on, can I try a little bit?" And the guy's like, "I don't know." He said, "Oh, let me just try lay a couple bricks or whatever." So sure enough, I guess the guy said, "Okay, I'll let you try to do a row. If you mess up, I can take them back off." And I guess old Art took that trowel, He put the things in there, lined it, pointed it or whatever, and said, that didn't look too hard. And he said when he was driving the bus away, the guy was still like looking at him like, what was that or whatever. That was Art Gray, okay? They were the kind of people, he had a spoon in his house that had a hole in it, and they put it in the sugar bowl. Okay, so if you took too long to get the sugar out of the bowl, it was all gone. Well, my kids played with that or whatever. But again, you just had to love the guy. But, you know, he was the kind of guy, though, that if he had something to say to you, he said it. You know, and you might come up and go, well, we're going to have the Valentine's banquet at 7 o'clock. You know, and I tell people, I'd look out and here he comes in the church a couple minutes early. I'm in trouble. Okay. Sure enough, he shut that door. Here he is coming across the road up the thing and he's coming with a mission. I'm in trouble. Okay. And then he goes, Pastor, got to see you. Okay. Why are we having it at 7 o'clock? Yeah, I can't hold off that long. I got to eat before that. Why 7? Okay. Here's what it is. Ron works and he doesn't get off till 6. And he says if we get off at 6, he can hustle home, get changed, and make it to the banquet by 7. If we have it earlier than that, he won't be able to make it. So we figured we'd make it at 7 so everybody could be there. We don't want to leave Ron out of it. Okay. You got a good reason? 7 o'clock it is. And we're okay, you know. Which I tell people, though, when you have, and I'll say this, when you have someone like that in your church, you don't haphazardly do something. You do it with a reason. Because if you don't have a reason, and you just haphazardly made decisions, they'll call you on it, and then you don't have an answer. So I tell people, well, do you like people like that in your church? Sure. Makes you think about things. Make sure you have reasons. You know what you're doing. And so again, Art, and the thing about Art is, his cemetery plots right here, my wife and I are right beside them, okay? So I don't know how long it's going to be till the Lord comes back after I die, but Art and I are going to spend some time together there in the grave. So I don't know what that means, okay? I have no idea. But we're going to be beside each other. All I know, when I go to Romola, I look up Art's grave, and I know that's where I'm supposed to go right there if the time comes. And I'm right beside them there. And again, what a man, just to know. And God just let me know and had good times of fellowship with him. When I go up to Massachusetts, a man up there that's just unbelievable is Don Edwards. He is literally related to the Edwards, who was the great preacher, Jonathan Edwards. He's a great grandson or whatever. And just a dear man. Again, you don't know these people, but what a solid guy. I mean, through everything, this man stayed with the church, said he knew that God was going to send somebody to change the church, and he wanted to be there to help the man do it, and all that had to be done. And sure enough, he was. And again, just a man who loved the Lord. Again, he was a man that when I'd preach sometimes, he'd just sit there and cry. And, you know, when it was all over, I'd say, did I say something that upset you? He said, no, I'm just crying because Jesus loves me and I just can't get over it. You know, and he'd be sitting there crying. And again, God took him home. And what a great service we had for him. But again, what a wonderful man who witnessed and told people about Jesus. Everybody knew Don Edwards and knew he was a Christian. He owned a Christmas tree farm. And he was always the one that would say, now you come down and you find the best tree on my farm and it's yours. And every year I'd start to pull my wallet out. And he'd go, dip, just put that away. And I'd tell people, so I'd have a live tree from his farm every year. And just really pretty. My kids loved it because he let them drive the golf carts around the farm. You know what I'm saying? So they couldn't wait to go get one. And they each had a golf cart and played demolition derby. I don't know. But they had a good time driving the carts around his farm. But what a great man Don Edwards was. And still miss him. I know he'll be in heaven. And that he'll be waiting there for me. Again, God's given me some, and again, this list is not complete because there's so many more, but God has given me some great people to know. And you know, when I stop and think about these people, you know, everybody has their foibles, their inconsistencies, but when I stop and think about these people, I don't think about those things. I think the great encouragements that they were. I know it's getting late, but the second group that I have, and I use it this way, is the people who are still faithful in the churches where I'm not right now. They're still faithful in the churches where I'm not. I'm not at Romola any longer as the pastor. I'm not at Calvary Bible Church, again, up in Massachusetts. I'm not at Landmark Baptist Church any longer there in Easley, South Carolina. The neat thing about it was that when we took Christy to go back to college, we decided, well, since we're going to be here over Sunday, let's run back up to Easley and go to church. And you know what? Some of the people who were just in there, dug their heels in, were faithfully serving. You know, we take Christy back, so she's got to be at least 18. So we're 18 years out of the place or whatever. We go back, and they still got their heels dug in. And they're still serving God and doing a wonderful work. The pastor was still the same pastor. The Hubbards were still there or whatever. I mean, just people that were faithful, serving God, and they're still there. And, the church had grown, and God was doing wonderful works. And I think about people like that. They're still with the ministry there. Again, when I think of Massachusetts, again, the Stringers and the Bussies come to mind. Okay? These are people that just hung on through all the things that we went through up there. And they basically said, Pastor, we're not quitting. We will never quit, no matter how bad it looks up here or where God takes us or how it goes. We'll not quit. And again, they're still up there, still ministering as faithful as can be. You know, and they're the ones that call me. When are you coming back? When are you coming up? The fish are biting. Okay, you need to get up here. You know, and but Doug and Dave, if I'm not mistaken, most of you met Dave and Elaine. She was Mary Magdalene in our first Easter plays. Everybody remember that? And Dave was behind the scenes doing a lot of things when he was here. Again, Doug Bussey's been here a number of times. Just people that are still faithful. Still by the stuff. We go out to Romola out there. Stanley and Shirley Poorman are still out there serving the Lord. The Heverleys are still there. Still serving the Lord. It's good to see the ministry going and that God is so good. And so, again, I remember those who are still faithful, still ministering. And so it's churches where I'm not. But, you know, when you go back, people are still dug in, still serving the Lord, doing what's right. The next group I have, it's basically this group I'm with right now. You know, those that I serve with on a daily basis. I do tell people this because I was sitting across from a man last night and we got a chance to talk. And he basically said this to me. I think my wife heard it. But he basically said this to me. He says, I've been serving in this church for a long time. I'm getting tired. I need people to help me. And they're not here. And they're not here. He said, I'm going to keep serving, but I need some help. I'm getting old. And there's nobody coming in to take it up with me. And I said to him, just hang in there. Keep being faithful till God comes. And you don't know what God has around the corner for you, but you just keep doing it. He says, there's certain things that I wish I could pass on to somebody. There's nobody to pass them on to. Nobody will take it up. And I was thinking, wow. You know, I think of the church, some of the people that I'm serving with now. You did a lot. You've been doing a lot for a long time. But I praise the Lord, there's some younger men that are coming up to take over some ministries. We need to keep having it. There's younger ladies coming in to take over the ministries. We need to continue doing that. And as I think here and think about this, I think of some that have been doing the ministry, been faithful for a long time, keep working at it, you know. But I'll see others coming alongside. And again, some of the older men teaching their wisdom or some of the older ladies teaching their wisdom to the younger ones to keep the ministry going. That's what it takes. I do tell people when I first stepped in here a number of years ago, when it came to a boardroom, I was like the youngest guy in the boardroom. We've made a little bit of a transition now, have we not? I'm not the youngest guy in the boardroom anymore. In fact, we're getting old here, some of us, aren't we, okay? But you know what? We just need faithful men, ladies, take over ministries, keep it going. Again, sometimes you might come to me and say, well, Pastor, what is there to do around here? It seems like everybody's got a job and everybody's doing it. Yeah, there is, but there might be some people that have been doing the job for a long time. You need to slide up beside them right now and help them with the ministry they're doing, because there come a time when they're not going to be able to do it any longer, and you're there to take it over. And you're there to take on and go on. That's what you do. And so it may not be that we need you to take over a ministry. We just need you to slide in and start with the ministry and see where it goes from there. But again, we got faithful people. I look around the church, okay? There's a number of you. You were here in 1982 when some young little guy came out of college and walked into this place. Were you not here? You're still here. You're dug in and you're still here. That's absolutely wonderful. Some of you, you're even younger than me, but you're here and you're still here, dug in and doing the job. But then again, I don't just give credit to those. There's a number of you here. You weren't here when I came here not that long ago. You weren't here. Now you're here. But you know what? You're dug in and you're ministering. You made this church yours. You know? You made it yours. And you're working hard. You've got ministries going. You're leading. You're teaching men, ladies alike. So again, we've got people that have been here forever. It's that the term to use? But we got some others that have kind of come in lately. But you know what? They're learning to work and get the job done. And that's what it needs for the ministry to keep going. You know what? When I think of church members, I don't look at church members thinking, oh, you know, because by the way, if you have a church with no church members, you don't have a church. You got a preacher preaching to empty seats, and that's no fun. By the way, Brad's here, ask him. If Jason's here, wouldn't you rather preach to a group than the one? When I would train these guys to preach in the competitions for KCA, they used to preach to me. And they would say, preaching to one person is the hardest thing in the world. Then when they get in the competition and have a crowd, it was a lot easier, was it not? Preachers would rather preach to a crowd than to a couple. Okay? Because you tell a joke and the person didn't get it. It's lousy. Okay? Somebody will get the joke in a group like this. Am I right about that? Somebody will get the joke. But again, it's hard to preach to a little bit. It's a lot bigger. So again, I thank the Lord for those of you who have been for years and you're serving God and you see ministry, you undertake it, you put your shoulders to the work and you've been doing it for years. Others have come in and you're getting involved in the ministry. And you might say, well, Pastor, what can I do? You know what? I don't care what your education level is. I don't care what your talent level is. God's got something for everybody here to do. You know what? And we can use you here. So again, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. Three people I remember, those who have gone on the glory. You know, if God takes me out of here today, I'm going to a crowd, folks. I'm going to have a lot of fun. I'm going to know a lot of people up in heaven. Going to know a lot of people when I get there. Good people. Again, and by the way, here's a statement I make sometimes. I've made this a couple of times, okay? Take it for what it's worth. Don't analyze it. I'm sorry for you people. I'm really sorry for you people because you have not got to meet all the people in my life that I've met. I have met some absolutely fantastic people in my life, and you've not got to meet them yet. Or you haven't, and you won't. But I've gotten to meet them, and they are absolutely fantastic people, and I feel bad that you haven't got to meet them. But you could almost say the same thing about your life. Am I right about that? You've got to know some great people that I'll never meet, but I have met some wonderful people in my lifetime. I can't wait to get to heaven. So we all get to heaven. I end with this. One of the best friends I've ever had, his name is Alan Sorrells. I do know my wife has made this statement, honey, if I die and Alan is still alive, he's singing at my wedding. I mean, you've made that statement. At funeral. Wedding. Don't get married again, by God. At funeral. Wedding. Wedding, funeral. What's the difference? She has Alan. I ran into Alan at Pickens Bible Church, the little church where the pastor was getting tired. By the way, that pastor was Alan's father-in-law. Am I right about that? And he died shortly thereafter. Again, when I was there, he was wore out. But I met Alan. And Alan was a car mechanic and said he didn't want to be a car mechanic. And he went back to college while I was there and got his degree in electrical engineering. And he went to work for Duke Power. And he got a great job with Duke Power. And from there, I got moved out of South Carolina, came back to Pennsylvania, and kind of lost touch with Alan. We've seen each other through the years. We've talked to each other. But some of you understand that, you know what, once you move out of an area and go hundreds of miles away, it is really hard to stay connected. Am I right about that? It's really hard to stay with people. But what a man this Alan is. He had a bass boat, and he said to me, do you bass fish? No. Would you like to? Absolutely. And so I did a lot of bass fishing with him. And then he said, do you hunt? I go, now that I do. Okay, I do hunting a lot. And so he... by the way, I went hunting with him, okay? And if you ever been in my study, you know I have a deer head mounted up there, a nice big 8-point. And he said, well, we're going to go out. We'll leave about 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to drive downstate. We're going to stop at a Waffle House and get something to eat. And then we're going to go hunting. So I went with them, with three guys, I think it was. And I'm with them or whatever. I had a tree stand, a 30-06. They're all carrying shotguns. And I'm like, I messed up, okay? I don't know. So I went down there and he said, well, you walk down here about 500 yards, take a left and go up there about 100 yards on the ridge and you hunt there and, you know, it just looks like a good spot. You know, so I walked down there how far, took a left. I couldn't find a ridge anywhere. Folks, we're in Piedmont down whatever in South Carolina. There's no bumps. There's no ridges. You know, when somebody says a ridge in Pennsylvania, what are you thinking? I can't even find something 3 foot high. I mean, it's just all flat. You know, and I don't know where I am. I don't know what's going on. I got turned around in the dark trying to find the ridge. And finally, I just said, I see a tree. I'm going to put my tree stand on it and hunt from here. Next thing you know, I go up and I look and there's a creek over there. And I'm like, I have no idea where the creek is. I'm not anywhere where I'm supposed to be. I'm about as lost as I can be. I'm just going to hunt. Next thing you know, a deer jumps the thing. I look at it. It's a nice big 8-point. And I shot it. Okay? And I got it. Now, if you hunt in South Carolina, you know what to do, don't you? You hide it behind a log and go back to hunting because you're allowed to shoot like 5 deer in one day. And I never did that. But you can shoot like 5 deer in one day. So you put it by the log, you go back to hunting. After a while, I hear these guys yelling for Rick, you know, and they're really far away. So I come down the stand or whatever, kind of marked where it was and headed for their voices and got down there or whatever. And they said, how you doing? And I said, I'm doing pretty good. And they go, well, what'd you shoot? And I go, what do you mean? They said, well, we heard you shoot. That had to be you because we didn't know who it was, but then you came from that direction. They said, did you shoot at a crow? And I go, no, I shot at a buck. And they go, you saw a deer? And I go, yeah, I saw a deer. And they said, well, you know, we've been hunting down here for 10 years and we've never even seen a deer. I forgot to ask the guys I'm hunting with, like, do you ever get anything? You know, do you ever see deer? Kind of dumb, was it not? Okay. They never seen a deer in 10 years. And they go, oh, well, did you miss it? No, I got it. You got a buck. Next thing you know, we forgot about lunch. They were running through the woods. They wouldn't know where the buck was. They carried that thing out of there. They put it on top of Alan's Scout, and we drove around town the rest of the day. I tell people, you know, I'm hunting with guys that don't even see deer. The next Saturday, we're hunting. They all had 30-06s and tree stands. So I don't know. This is Alan. Just a great guy to know. A funny guy. Again, did different things with him. You know, but kind of our friendship kind of got lost through the years, though we make contact from time to time, you know. But what a man when I was young, going into a church that needed some help, and what a support he was to be there, you know, and just tell me, you know, just keep preaching. This is what we need. And, you know, what a great man he was. And I tell people, I can't wait to get to heaven because I'd like to be with Alan. Now, I know there's family and all that, but I'd like to be with Alan. You know, I got to know him for like a year and a half, was it? And then it's over. And God moved me one place, and God even moved him out. So when I go back to Greenville, he doesn't even live there anymore. He's far away from there. So I can't even visit him when we head back there. But see, when I get to heaven, I get to be around people like that. Wonderful people. You get to heaven. If you get there before me, you look up Alan Searles, and you tell him Rick's coming. And we're going to have some fun again. What a great man he was. Folks, I'm just going to end it with this. I told you last week to be thankful for your salvation. I told you Sunday night a harder one. Be thankful for God, things that God has taken away from us, but they make us stronger and better. Today I'm telling you to be thankful for people you go to church with. We're not perfect. God's still doing a work in us. But when you stop and think about us, think good things. Think good things of what it means to have these people in church and what we add to church and how we help and how we've helped you. And then while you're doing it, whisper a prayer up. Isn't that what it says in these verses? Whisper a prayer up. Whenever somebody comes to mind, whisper a prayer up. Because you know what? That's what we're living on, prayers of other people. We've got to have that. So I am thankful for church members gone, far away, still with me. Are you all still here? Still with me. You've hung with me, have you not? I haven't done everything perfect. I don't hide Easter eggs in graveyards anymore. But I don't do everything perfect. But you know where I don't? Help me. Don't beat me up. Try to help me. But you know what? When you do something and it's not right, I try not to beat you up. I try to help you. Folks, we need each other in this Christian walk. Did you get the message? I think you have. Thank God for church members. Without church members, this church would just be whatever. Father, I thank you for those that you've allowed me to know in this world. And Lord, I've got to know some great Christians from this church, from other churches I've been in. Lord, some of them are already with you. Lord, some I won't see again probably until we get to heaven. But Lord, you've allowed me to go to church with some wonderful people. Lord, bless each one of them. Lord, may I be true to my preaching that every time I think of a church member or a name comes up in conversation, may I whisper a prayer for that person, Lord, and remember the good things that they are. And Lord, how you loved them enough to die for them. And Lord, I should also extend grace to them the same way you've extended it to me. Lord, help us to build one another up. Help us to be good for one another. And Lord, I pray then when it's all done and said, this church's mission will still be to evangelize the lost and edify the saints. Again, thank you for Jesus. And Lord, may we know this is your church. And Lord, that we would work to do the things that would please you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.